This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Thank you, and good afternoon. You should have a handout that looks like this and another one that looks like that. Looks like he's done a real good job of passing those out this afternoon. I'm curious why you came to this session. What is your interest? How many of you are school teachers or have been school teachers? How many of you are working in some kind of youth ministry, a kids club ministry, a homework club at your house after school? How many of you have a snotty-nosed neighbor that comes over a lot? As you are here this afternoon, I'm assuming that you came because you're interested in reaching out to the children that are around us. And I want to share with you some of my thoughts and some things that I've learned about working with troubled children. But we live in a world that is, it's really hard on children. Have you noticed that? There's almost everything that happens, negative social, negative problems in our world, almost everything that goes wrong affects the children more than anybody. War, financial problems, famine, drug and substance abuse, sexual sin. The children get it, you know, more than anyone. And at times, I don't know if you agree with that, but at times it's overwhelming to me, the problem that's in our world. And so sometimes, to be honest with you, I ask the question, is God's arm too short? And can God really reach the needs that are around us? When I was 7 years old, my family, my father was a dairy farmer, and my family took a little time off, and we went to Northern White Gospel Missions in northwestern Ontario, and they flew us into a northern reserve called Pecanskum, and we stayed there in Pecanskum for 10 days. We were taking the place of some missionary who was gone, and I was 7 years old. I don't remember all the details, but what I do remember is we barely got there, and we were in this strange place, you know, and we're in this faraway land. We land, and we're on float planes, and we go up to the house to live in the house where the missionary was going. We were taking their place for a while, and we were barely there, and children started coming over. The adults didn't. The adults didn't come. This little community of about 1,000 people, the adults didn't. We didn't know the language. They didn't, you know, they didn't know our language, some of them, but the children came over, 5-year-olds, 8-year-olds. And for my main memories of that 10 days in Pecanskum were hanging out with little boys and girls from the community that were about my age. And so I suppose that was where I cut my teeth on youth ministry, maybe. I also remember my dad was a big, he was a dairy farmer, but he was really big on taking all the children in our community to Sunday school. And so I remember when I got my license, I got a little car. One Sunday, my parents had to go somewhere else, and so dad told me that it was my job to pick up all the children that we normally took to Sunday school for church on Sunday morning, and he took the van and went somewhere else. I had my little bucket seat car and took 11 children in that car with me to Sunday school, to our church. And so, you know, youth ministry is all around us. It's right under our nose. I don't know where you live and what you do and what your interest is, but youth ministry is all around us. So, yeah, we live in a broken world, and I just want to share with you a few things that I've learned. What is broken? You know, we could spend a lot of time on this, and honestly, the more you look at what's broken, the more depressed you get about the world we live in. I don't intend to make us depressed here, but we do have to look at the problem. And what is, as I evaluate the problem that that's in front of us as far as working with troubled children, I think we need to look at four areas that are a problem as we think about and try to understand what we need to do to work with troubled children or marginalized children. First is that we have children in our country are on too much medication. In the United States, the United States has 5% of the world's population, but we use 95% of the world's psychotropic drugs. A boy today is in 2019 is 30 times more likely to be on medication than what he was in 1989. And 1989 was 30 years ago. It's when I picked that date because that was the year I turned 21 and kind of entered the threshold of manhood or left childhood or whatever. But 30 years ago, we wasn't using psychotropic medication on children at near the way we are today. Now, I'm not here to pick on you probably all have someone you know or maybe someone in your family or whatever that are on a medication to help them with, coping with life. And I'm not here to pick on that at all. I'm just simply saying that we are using medication way too much. That's all I'm saying. We are using medication in our country to parent children is what we're doing. We go to a doctor to ask them to do what parents are supposed to do. And we'll talk more about why that is here in a minute. But we're using too much medication. We also, as you know, have too much screen time. Children in our culture and around us are growing up with phones and computers and television 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There is a children in America. This is one study that was done. Children in America spend 35 to 50 hours a week on a screen. Boys spend 13 hours a week playing video games. And we can look at this problem two ways. One is just the sheer time. Think about that: 35 to 50 hours a week that a child is looking at a screen. It's mind-boggling. When you think about just the sheer time of it. But then the other way to look at it, the problem, is the content of what they're looking at. Video games that boys are playing are violent and they're unrealistic. It's a virtual world that doesn't match reality. And so you look at this problem and the sheer amount of time and the content of what they're doing, it's a serious problem to spend this much time doing anything. Imagine if we could get five of those hours back and that children could have five nights a week, have an hour sitting around the table as a family enjoying supper together. If we could just get five of those hours back. And if we get five more hours back where, the children could spend Saturday with dad and mom washing the car, pulling weeds in the flower bed, something other than screen time, right? Even just a plain old wrestling match on the living room floor. If we could get some of that screen time back. But that's the problem. We're spending tremendous amounts of time. It's basically all extra time and beyond even extra time that the children are spending on screen time, and it's a tremendous problem. You can spend the rest of our time here talking about why and what, but I'm just saying that's a huge impact on the children that you and I are working with. I think a third area, and I'm not picking on teachers here, I support what you do, but I want to say a third area of impact that influences the children we work with is education pressure or education, too much education pressure that comes from, as you work with public schools, there's federally mandated standards that children have to do certain things and accomplish certain things by a certain time, and many children can do that. But the children that you and I are talking about, the marginalized ones, are not able to keep up with those standards. It's not necessarily good for those children to have that kind of pressure. And I think in many of our Christian schools, we look at education as a more basic thing, reading, writing, and arithmetic. And the education that we get in some of our Christian schools is applied to real life. That's not exactly what's happening in public schools today. There's an education pressure that is really hard on the children that we're talking about here today. And I think another way of looking at this is that it's education without purpose. Our culture, United States, believes that we can solve every ill with education, and it's not true. There's a spiritual problem, right? There's a lot of problems, and education doesn't resolve everything. We think that if we get an education, then we get a good job, and basically it looks something like this. A kid that's going to school kind of gets this message that you should go to school so you can graduate from high school, so you can graduate from college, so you can get a good job, so you can make lots of money, so you can buy nice things, so you can retire early and play with your money, so you can die and will it all to your children. That's not very high purpose, right? For education. That's not a good reason. You don't get inspired with that kind of line of thinking, and it's all around us. You know, we get a good go to college so you can, you know, get rich and get a good job, right? That's not a good reason to go to college. If you go to college, you should go for a high purpose. And there are high purposes for going to college, but it's not that. And so I think that part of our problem, our impact on a lot, many of our children, is education pressure that looks like what I'm trying to describe. I think the fourth area of impact is probably most damaging, or not probably, I believe it is the most damaging, is too little family. Too much education pressure, too much medication, too much screen time, but too little family is the problem in our nation today. Reality of it is that 24 million children in our nation live in a home without a biological father. I cannot imagine that. Can you imagine? I don't know all your stories, but I'm pretty sure that most of you here, I'm not all of you, but most of you here today grew up in a family where your biological mother and father were present. I have no idea what it would be like for me to grow up in a household where my biological father was not present. I'm pretty sure that I would have gotten into a lot of the same problems that we're looking at with marginalized children. I would have gotten into the same problem. I threw a brick through a window. You know, I did all those same things that boys that get in trouble have done. And I'm pretty sure that probably you did too. Without the influence of your dad being there, you know, it changes everything. It's too little family is a real problem in our nation. In 1950, 4% of babies were born in our country were born to unmarried moms. 1990, 28% were born to unmarried moms. In 2019, fully 40% of babies born in America were born to unmarried mom. It changes everything. When we have, in our country, 50% of our nation's children are growing up in a house where at least one biological parent is missing. Over half of our nation's children, it changes everything when that's the case. When we look at this problem of too little family, that's why when I went to Pecanchium and I was 7 years old, those little children came over to our house because there wasn't, you know, one parent, at least one parent was missing, and they were, you know, there was no structure, there's no guidance for their day, so they came over to see these white people that just flew in and came in the house next door. And, you know, those children that show up at your house with no agenda, no plan, you know, nobody looking over their shoulder. These are children that are living in households where one parent or more is not missing. Now, that doesn't say there isn't two adults in the house. Step parents and unmarried adults are in the house, but it's a real problem when one biological parent is missing. I just to illustrate this a little bit, I was in a meeting some time ago at a public school meeting, and we were in a meeting. The purpose of the meeting was to meet and talk about the problems of this specific boy. And I looked at, and I, as we sat around this table, the large table, large conference table, I counted 14 adults. There were 14 adults in the room and one boy. Those 14 adults were gathered, and I was one of the 14, but those 14 adults were gathered because we were trying to figure out what we were going to do with this one boy and his behavior and his issues and the struggle that was going on in his life. That's why we were gathered there, all 14 of us. There was the principal, the assistant principal, there was a teacher, a couple teachers, there was a guidance counselor, there was a probation officer, there was an after-school counselor, there was a psychologist, And I'm not even up to 14 yet, but anyway, you get the idea. There was 14 adults in the room, and our purpose was to try to figure out what we're going to do with this boy. Well, this boy had done some things that looked an awful lot like what I had done when I was his age, right? I had gotten on a state highway and driven a truck without a license. I had thrown a brick through a window. And I, you know, I had done some of the same things this boy had done, and 14 adults never gathered to try to figure out what to do with me. Why? Because there was only one adult that took care of it, and he was my dad. You know, my dad was the judge and the police officer and the principal. He is all that stuff rolled up into one. And it was the way God designed it for a boy. When you get in trouble, dad deals with it. And, you know, when I threw a brick through a window, my dad took care of things. I got a good old-fashioned licking. And then, you know, I go over to the neighbor and we make it right. And we fix the window. And, you know, it's over. And no probation officer, no police, nobody. It was just dad. And that's the difference of what's going on in our world. What we're doing isn't working. As we try to, you know, work with troubled children, all these adults and services and whatever, too little family is the problem. And it's a big problem. There's a book, and I have a little load of books up here that I've read in my life. And I'm just pointing a few of them out. There's a book written by Judith Wallstein. Let me flip through this. Judith Wallstein, she writes a book about called The Unexpected Legacy of Divorce, 25-year landmark study. She says that one important study showed that children of 25 years showed that those who are closely involved with their fathers at age 5 were more empathetic as adults, were happier as husbands and as parents than those who had not experienced close relationship with their own fathers at 25 years later. This is a very interesting book written by a non-Christian, a secular author who did this study, studying the effects of divorce. Our culture, there are people, foolish people, ungodly people in our culture that say, oh, it's best for the children to get a divorce. You know, children are resilient. You know, they're going to be sad for a little while, but they'll get over it. It's not true. God's design for family is God's design for family. And there is a long-lasting effect of this idea of too little family. And she talks about that in her book, The Unexpected Legacy of Divorce. Donald Miller writes a book, To Own a Dragon. That's an interesting title, isn't it? To Own a Dragon, to grow up without a dad is a little bit like owning a dragon. It's a problem. I've never owned a dragon, but I suppose that would be a problem. But he kind of compares growing up without a father to owning a dragon. And he says if a kid grows up feeling he's burdened by people around him, he's going to operate as though the world doesn't want him. I didn't recognize this feeling in myself until the last few years in my late 20s and early 30s, but it has always been there. Growing up without a dad is a problem, particularly for a boy. In his book, Generation IY, Tim Elmore talks about this the phenomenon of growing up without family. He talks about children in today's world that they get to adulthood, or there's actually thresholds that as a child grows up at 5 and 10 and at whatever years, there's thresholds that you move towards adulthood, and he likens those thresholds to coming to a toll booth, and you pay your toll. And then you go to the next thing. You graduate from high school. It's kind of like you pay your toll. Now you take the next thing and you go get a job, or you enroll in college and you pay your toll. And what he's saying is that children of today, as they grow up, don't actually ever pay the toll. They come to the toll booth to go towards maturity, and they never pay the toll. They just sit there and block traffic. And you know that's true. As you look around, and you know people in your sphere of people you know that are, you know, they're 25 years old and they're still sleeping on their mom's sofa, right? They're 30 years old and they haven't had gainful employment yet in their life. And those are people who have not paid their toll and moved on towards adulthood. This is the problem. What is my time? Like, I'm supposed to be done in how far?
You got about 25 minutes.
All right. So I just want to make sure. We're good. So I'm trying to describe to you the problem that we have, and looking at it from a couple different angles. Typically, children should mature in four areas. Obviously, it's biological or physical. As a child grows up, physically, he gets bigger. He gets stronger. He runs around. And, you know, obviously there's exceptions to that. But biologically, a child should grow and become stronger and look like an adult. A child should also mature cognitively and in intelligence. Your way of thinking through reasoning or logic should grow and mature as a child gets older, and he needs to be, and if he's in a healthy place or a healthy environment, he also should learn social relationships. He should learn how to relate to his parents, learn how to relate to peers, other kids in school, children on the playground as you grow up and become a teenager, to be able to relate to people of the opposite sex in healthy ways. Those social relational children, it's an important area of maturity as a child grows. Also need to grow in the area of emotions and dealing with your emotions and feelings and being able to process feelings, to share feelings, and to have feelings that are expressed in a healthy way. As we look at children today, Tim Elmore talks about this in his book, that children tend to grow up in today's world, are tending to grow up lopsided. And I know at camp I see that a lot, where a child that's 12 years old actually has certain areas of his life where he might actually function more like an adult. He actually can do things or knows things or understands things about life that he really shouldn't even know at 12 years old. He's almost like a 20-year-old in that area. But then there's other areas where he's way behind. He's 4 years old. And typically that's things like how he handles his emotions and social and relationship issues. But the reality of it is a lot of the children that we work with or that you work with are lopsided in their development. They've gotten behind. They're very gifted in some things, and then maybe in other areas they're very behind, and they don't know how to apply the knowledge that they have, or they can't work out what they actually know cognitively in relationship. So as we work with children in whatever ministry you have, we just need to understand that today's youth are growing up lopsided, very gifted in some areas and pitifully behind in others. There's no correlation between giftedness and maturity. A child can be very gifted but in certain areas, but that doesn't mean he's mature. It doesn't mean he's ready for life. And as we work with children, we need to understand that. As you think about this problem, this has been a favorite verse for me from Jeremiah. It says, stand at the crossroads and look. Ask for the ancient path. Ask where the good way is and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. I think that as youth workers, as missionaries trying to reach out to the marginalized children that are around us, we need to back up first and evaluate what we're doing. And I want to say that the old-fashioned principles from Scripture apply today. The answer to the question, is God's arm too short, is no, it's not. God's ways are still the ways to reach out to the young people we're working with. As for the ancient paths, I've noticed in my life that people that write about social problems and write about problem children, they tend to come up with newfangled ways of saying the same thing that somebody said 30 years ago, but this is actually an old truth. Somebody wrote a book or some doctor came up with a great idea, but actually underneath that new language that he puts on that new idea, if it's true, it's in the Bible. What he's saying is there. It might not be in quite his fancy language, but let's ask for the ancient paths. Let's look where the good way is and learn to walk in it. Today's youth need challenge in three areas. So just trying to get a little more practical here as you think about working with young people in whatever way you're doing it. And it could be just, that little kid that comes over for Kool-Aid after school. It doesn't have to be some big program like some camp or whatever. It can be whatever God lays in front of you. Actually, when we first moved to Maryland from Pennsylvania, we ran into a in our community, right under our nose, was a couple of girls that were living as homosexuals, and they had a baby that was a couple months old when we got there. And because of their work situation and whatever, some of the chaos in their family, we started babysitting this little guy, and he was still in diapers. He was 6 months old or less. And he, you know, we had an opportunity to take him into our home for a while. And I remember, you know, kind of putting him to sleep. You know, that little guy's 10 years old today, but still runs around in our community. I don't know what youth ministry looks like. It doesn't have to be some big organized program. Do what's under your nose. But as you think about it, keep a few of these things in mind. Today's youth need challenged in three areas. I think we need to challenge them as we work with children. We need to challenge them in their emotional intelligence. We need to... we need to help them manage their emotions, help them to be able to talk about or become aware of how other people feel about their emotions, and the things that they say, to become aware of what it means to relate well with other people. We also need to help them with their moral intelligence, to help them develop character and integrity, to learn to be honest. To help children develop personal discipline. It's extremely important for a child to become mature, to learn to persevere to the end of a project, to persevere to the end of their homework lesson, to persevere to the end of the big, humongous basket of laundry. Like, finish it and put it away. These are important things to help a child at a young age learn to persevere. When I was a little guy, I had to learn how to eat my food till it was all gone, right? To persevere with those peas and finish them up. These are things that children don't know how to do in our world. So if you have opportunities, that's pretty important. Personal discipline, to learn to be secure in yourself, to learn strong spiritual values. Yeah, that's the bottom line. That's what we're trying to do. We want every child we work with, every neighbor and every person in our community to come to know the Lord and to follow Him and to be with us in glory someday. That's what our real goal is. But I'm pretty convinced that we have to start at the beginning. We have to teach a child how to deal with their emotions, how to respect themselves and respect their mom, to learn to persevere with hardship. You know, these are things I think you almost have to learn before you can come to know the Lord. You take the situation where broken families are such a huge part of our reality. Of course, a child can hardly even understand who God is if you're growing up in a house where there's no father or where the man in your home is abusive and all that. So you really have to start from the beginning. Sometimes, you know, spiritual values is what we really want, but sometimes we have to start before that. We also need to teach our children to have leadership intelligence, to have vision and courage, to look at the big picture, not be so worried about myself, but to care about other people, to have goals and priorities, to think ahead. You know, troubled children especially don't think ahead 5 minutes, but to learn to think ahead and have priorities and goals for next week and next month is a pretty important thing. So these are areas that we need to teach children. If you think about it, the children that you're looking at today are the adults of tomorrow, right? I mean, we know that. But it's scary when you stop and think about it, because that child that you know today is going to be the employee at the store you shop at tomorrow. That child's going to be the police officer that is patrolling our town tomorrow. That child, you know, whatever, fill in the blank. The children of today are the adults of tomorrow. The business owner or nurse at the hospital, when you go to the hospital to receive medical care, that child of today is going to be the nurse of tomorrow. And she may care for you, or he may care, right? We have to think about it that way. We have to help our children that we work with think about their life in that way, to help them have priorities and goals. And to be able to plan and think for the future. We need to have purpose. As you relate to children in your life, you need to be a person that has purpose. The things that you do, the children that are watching you, whether it's in your ministry or just as you have a neighbor a kid or whatever you do, the children will watch you. They need to see you have a sense of purpose about your life. Proverbs, it says, where there is no vision, the people perish. Somebody said to set yourself on fire and the whole world will come to watch you burn. Those little kids at Pecanscom, that's what they came to do. They came to watch somebody burn. There's nothing else going on. And so if you have a purpose about your life and you're doing interesting things, if you're going fishing every once in a while, that little boy next door is going to want to know what you're up to. If you're changing the oil on your car, do things that have a sense of purpose in your life, you will attract children that are looking for purpose. Having purpose is a pretty important thing for yourself. As followers of Christ, as Christians, this should be easy, right? We have a high purpose for why we live life. This should be easy, and we need to communicate that purpose as we work with the children that God places in our path. I think the second thing I want to share about is just having rules or boundaries. Set boundaries and structures in the way you work with children. Children, especially younger children, need predictability. Sometimes as we work in youth ministry, it becomes this chaotic mess, right? If you've done kids club ministry, you know what I'm talking about. You spill red Kool-Aid and Texas sheet cake all over the place by the time we're done with this situation, right? It's a chaotic mess. And so we need to be people, and we're going to have chaos, but we need to be people who have structure and boundaries and organization in the way we work with children. We need to say no. Children need those kind of boundaries. And this little illustration is kind of to illustrate when children are younger, those boundaries are tighter. As they get a little older, the boundaries open up, obviously. And it's a sloppy process. Like you could say that, you know, the children we work with cross those boundaries. They get out of bounds all the time. But the boundary's still there to pull them back, right? We need structure and organization. Apply that in whatever you're doing. I think that's a pretty important point, to have structure and organization. There's a story about, talking about rules or boundaries, there's a story about some elephants in Africa, and I'm going to try to speed it up here a little bit, but there's some elephants in Africa that, there's a certain place in Africa, a park, Peelensburg Park in Africa, where the elephants were hunted to extinction. So the conservation officers went to another part of Africa, and they went and caught about 30 young elephants or juvenile elephants and loaded them up and took them over to this Peelensburg Park. And the reason they took juvenile elephants is because obviously a juvenile elephant is half the size of an adult elephant, so you can get more on the truck. And so they got 30 of them, put them on the truck, took them over to the park and unloaded them, and they were trying to promote elephant reproduction in this place where there was no elephants. So the elephants got off the truck. And over the course of the next year, the conservation officers that were observing this saw that these young elephants went wild. And they literally ripped trees out of the ground. They crashed into people's houses. They killed rhinos. These juvenile elephants went crazy. And they beat each other up, especially the males. The juvenile elephant males that were half the age of an adult, but they're still pretty big, right? They were beating each other up a lot. And so as the conservation officers looked at this and observed what was going on, they went back to the other elephant herd and kind of watched what happened over there, and they decided, you know what? We need some bull elephants over in this herd. They loaded up three bull elephants, took them over to the juvenile elephant herd that they had put in this park a year later, unloaded them off the truck, and almost immediately, well, these bull elephants are like twice as big as the juveniles, and they kind of lumber in there, and so when the juvenile males are ripping trees out of the ground and beating up on each other, the bull elephant comes over, and I saw pictures of this. This big bull elephant comes over, puts his head down, and just knocks the juvenile on his hind end. And that process of big bulls knocking the juveniles on their hind end over time calmed everybody down. It's the problem, right? We need rules and boundaries. We're we're not elephants, right? I get that, and so we should do it in a little different. Don't knock him over. Well, maybe you should once in a while, but it's important to have structure and boundaries in the way we relate to the children that God's placed in our path. The third thing I want to say is to have fun. I think sometimes in the chaos and the uncertainty and even fear that goes along with working with children, we forget to have fun and just to enjoy them. So many of the children we work with haven't been enjoyed by any adults in their life. The Bible says there is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love. You have to decide you're going to have fun. I know a guy that runs a kids club ministry every Tuesday night. When he gets up in front of the kids club before they do their thing, you know, he almost always has some kind of lame joke. You know, dad joke is what he has. He's bald, and so he usually has some joke about his bald head. And if it's not about his bald head, it's about his cute wife. And, you know, everybody rolls their eyes and groans. But he's having fun, and the kids love it, even though they roll their eyes, okay? It's important that we find a way to just have fun with the children that we're working with, while we're having boundaries and rules and having a sense of purpose that we have fun. We used to raise strawberries when I was up in Pennsylvania, and we used to bring the children in, or there was young people from our town that would come in and help us pick strawberries, and a lot of them had never learned to work before and didn't know how to be responsible, and half the time in our strawberry patch it would turn into these strawberry fights where everybody's throwing strawberries at everybody, and it irritated me because basically I wanted to pick strawberries and sell them, not throw them at each other. But every once in a while, I decided, okay, what the world? Let's have a strawberry fight. And everybody would plaster everybody else, and we'd have a good old time and then try to get back to work. It's chaotic sometimes, but it is important to have fun. I think Amos Esh taught me this at Beaver Lake Camp many years ago when I was 19, working with children. I don't know if any of you know Amos Esh or not, but he's not exactly... he's kind of a plain, no-nonsense type of person. But at youth camp, he cuts loose. And there's Amos laughing at the top of his lungs. And I didn't even hardly know the guy, because, you know, he was having fun with the children that were at youth camp. And I kind of learned some of that watching him. So have fun is an important part of working with children. Have purpose, have rules, and have fun. Joel says, beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I'm strong. As we try to work with troubled young people today, it's a scary thing sometimes to get involved in messy situations and messy families. But let's not forget this truth. Let the weak say, I'm strong. You can do things that have an impact. And I want to say that the question is taken from Numbers. Is the Lord's arm too short? This is where Moses was asking the Lord when the children of Israel were wild, and they were complaining about not having meat. They were sick of manna, and they were wanting to go back to Egypt. And Moses was at the end of his wits, trying to figure out what to do with the children of Israel. And he says to God, what am I supposed to do? You know the story. And God says to Moses, well, God said, I'm going to bring meat, and the children of Israel are going to have meat. And Moses said, how in the world is that possible? There's 600,000 men, plus women and children. There's no way. We could slaughter animals for days, and how would we ever have meat? And God said to Moses, a rhetorical question. Is the Lord's arm too short? It's a rhetorical question because everybody knows the answer. God's arm is not too short. So when you think about that messed up child or the youth ministry or the child that's in your school and you just aren't sure what to do about it, God's arm is not too short. Do not forget that. God will reach down and do something in this situation through you, and keeping in mind some of these principles, I believe that God will reach down and do something really special. And I have a quick. I think I could tell stories from boys that I've worked with at camp where this is true, but I was thinking about this and I decided to go back 25 years to a story that has nothing to do with camp in a way, but I couldn't resist. This week at our camp, at Allegheny Boys Camp, there's a boy that he's had a lot of problems, and we're actually considering kicking him out of camp because we're just barely able to handle him. And we've been praying about him like crazy and having stern conversations and intense problems with him. And finally, here last week, he came out. He started to talk about some stuff that we knew was the problem. He started to talk about his emotions that had been all bottled up. And he talked about how his dad died of an overdose when he was 9 years old, and how there's such conflict in his family between his dad and his grandma. He lives with his grandma now. And he remembers, he talked about this feeling of remembering when his dad and his mom got in this big, his grandma got in this big argument, and then dad disappeared. And nobody knew where he went. And little 9-year-old boy is wondering, where's my dad? For days, he disappeared. And then grandma starts to worry, well, where did he go? This guy would disappear for days at a time, but at the end of a week, the end of 2 weeks, where's he at? And this boy at camp is talking about what it's like to have dad disappear. And then they find out about 3 months later that he actually overdosed out in the woods somewhere, and his body was found. It was just a skeleton. And so those months of not knowing, and then all of a sudden, knowing. And this boy at camp is talking about that in his group to his chief. And nobody, I do not know what that feels like. I don't understand what that's like to lose my dad. But his chief and his group, Nate Byler, his dad died when he was 15. Now, how could we arrange that scenario to where this boy with this issue is in the same group with a leader of his group that understands? So when this boy says all these things about losing his dad, he has a chief that understands for real. Only God could arrange this stuff. God's arm is not too short. I'll finish with this story. In 1994, there was three of us from Bald Eagle Boys Camp that went to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And we went down there to the Department of Human Services to ask for permission to start Bald Eagle Boys Camp, to try to get a license to start camp. And we sat in this office. I remember there's three of us, the board chairman and the director and myself, were there with two men from Department of Human Services. The one guy's name is Jerry. He was a short, black-haired Italian guy that loved to talk about his spaghetti sauce. The other guy was a big 6'2" black man that was maybe 50 pounds overweight, huge man. And his name was Richard. And Richard was the boss, but Jerry was responsible for our region and did most of the talking. And we explained what we wanted to do about starting a camp, and we explained how we're going to do all this stuff and our really cool program and who we are and all this stuff. We're Mennonites, and we care about struggling children and this and that. And then we explained everything. We had papers and books and all this stuff that we submitted to Jerry and Richard from the Department of Human Services. And as we sat there and described all this stuff, Jerry, who was responsible for us, he was our Central Region Pennsylvania man, that if we were going to get a license, he had to like us, all right? He said, there is no way I will ever give you a license to operate a program like that. You can't live in tents. You can't have boys cooking their own food, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not ever going to give you a license to do that. And we left that meeting. I left that meeting discouraged. I had just moved my family to Pennsylvania to help start a camp. And here we are, we're not going to be able to start a camp. We left that meeting and we're walking out the hall. And the big guy, Richard, who was in charge, as we left the meeting, he reached out to our board chairman and he said, come here a minute. And he pulled him behind the door and he said, listen, I know Jerry talks a tough talk, and he makes it sound like you'll never get your license. Just listen to him and try to work with him. But we're going to let you guys start your camp. We're gonna be behind you. This is going to work. I know who you are. I know who you Mennonites are. I know you're good people, and I know you care about troubled kids. And I want to see this happen. But listen to Jerry. Just kind of work with him. but we're going to work this out. How did Richard know who we are? Big, the boss at Department of Human Services. The reason he knew is because when he was a boy, and I'm guessing this was probably in the 70s, when he was a boy, Hurst Street Mennonite Church in Harrisburg had Vacation Bible School, and Richard attended their Vacation Bible Schools. And he went to those Vacation Bible School classes. I don't even know what happened in those classes, but something happened that Richard knew who we are. He knew what we were about. He trusted us at a level that Jerry didn't, because somebody was faithful at Hurst Street Mennonite Church in Harrisburg in their Vacation Bible School class, and they did what was right, and they served the Lord. And that person, I don't even know who it is. I wish I knew. They're probably dead and gone. I don't actually know that. But I would love for that person to know. They'll never know what they did. You'll never know always what impact you have when you do what's right by the struggling children that we're working with. God bless you.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.